What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with our expert corner interviews where we bring in short-term rental investors willing to share the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between with their short-term rental investing journey. Today, we've got Shannon and Tyler Reif joining us. Guys, appreciate you joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Sean.
Absolutely. These are always my favorite conversations where we just get to catch up on the journey and, hear about all the lessons learned and how this short-term rental adventure is going for you. And I always appreciate you letting other people listen into these conversations. They are by far our most popular conversations and episodes when we get to have these episodes with short-term rental investors. So when I start though, before we dive right into the journey, I like to just kind of warm up. I love to know where people are from, what pays the bills, what got you, what we do for a living, and then we'll dive into the short-term rental journey.
Yeah. Well, this feels like a full circle moment because we started 4 or 5 years ago listening to your podcast, and that's how we got involved in Bodicy. Awesome. But yeah, my name is Shannon Reif. We live in Denver, Colorado with our family. Similar career paths. I work in technology sales. I lead a technology sales team for a large tech company. And
yeah, I'm also in sales for a much smaller company. So it's kind of fun when we, look at each other's careers and compare and contrast, and there's pros and cons of both. But at the end of the day, it's all sales, and I think that's been beneficial when it comes to a lot of the short-term rental investing that we've been doing, and just real estate in general.
Awesome. What about family? Kids?
Yes, we have 2 kids. We have a 6-year-old son and a 3-year-old daughter. So they keep us very busy.
Just getting busier. Yeah. Mine are 14 now, twins, but they, boy, girl as well, but they just, they get to that age and it's like, we're just chasing them around. Right. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I love it, but it's definitely, that's the social life is put on the back burner and it's kid life, right?
It is. Yeah. Our weekends now are soccer games when they used to be whatever we wanted to do on the weekends. So
probably has something to do with the timeline that Shannon just mentioned. We've been listening to you for 5 years, and 5 years later, we have our first short-term rental. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. I love it. So we live in Denver. Has that always been home? Were you born and raised in that area?
I was born and raised in Colorado, so I've always lived within probably an hour and a half of Denver. We met in Boulder, Colorado. We both went to school. We're both Buffs, graduated from CU Boulder, and have lived in Denver ever since.
Yeah, I'm from California. Shannon said I went to school in Boulder, primarily went to Colorado for, the skiing, the outdoors, and, a big reason why I ended up staying in Colorado after graduating is the outdoors and just, what Colorado has to offer.
Yeah. Can't beat those Rocky Mountains, right? I always tell, I'm in Utah, and so those Western mountains are pretty tough to beat.
Utah may be better than Colorado though. Just the proximity to the airport. You guys have us beat there.
Yeah. We don't tell everybody.
And a little less crowded, I would say.
Yeah. Let's do that offline. We'll have that conversation offline. We're getting real crowded around here already.
The mountains are terrible. Don't go there. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Awesome. Well, listen, what about real estate investing? Have you dabbled in it at all? Have you done any other real estate investing before you got interested in short-term rentals?
We kind of fell into real estate investing. We dabble, and we're not real estate investors by any stretch of the imagination. But we bought our first house or row home in downtown Denver probably 10 years ago now. And we outgrew that when we wanted to start a family, and we held on to that as a long-term rental. So we've got a long-term rental here in Denver, and then we have a long-term rental in Columbus, Ohio, of all places. But this is the first short-term rental that we've done.
Nice. Tell me what brought you to Columbus? Was it just looking at an investment, or we went over there for an investment side of it, right?
Yeah. Purely an investment. It was an acquisition we made during COVID when interest rates were at an all time low. We knew we had to take advantage of that. So yeah, we did some research on different areas and kind of landed on Columbus just based upon acquisition price and different things that were getting built around there. The college is right there, of course, as well. So very, very random, and neither of us have ever been to Columbus to this day.
Yeah, we've never seen the house. I think we've owned it for, what, 4 or 5 years, and we've never seen the house. We may never see the house because we're unsure if we're going to keep that house. We've got maybe some future plans for it. So, we may never actually see that property. So it was purely investment. Just, but we've got investment. A property manager on that one. And then we manage our Denver one. So
yeah, just one of those turnkey long-term investments, right? You buy it, it's already managed. Everything's, you know, it's like you just, the true mailbox money.
Yes.
When it comes to the little, a little different on the work scale from those long-term, like true, like mm-hmm. turnkey properties versus short-term rental investing, right?
Way as different. Far as,
yeah.
Different.
So,
yeah.
So go ahead, Tyler. Sorry.
I was going to say that the cash flow is very different, but you know, luckily there's been a lot of, we've got a lot of equity out of it. So that's why she mentioned we have plans to potentially 1031 it or roll that into something, some other investment.
Yeah. Nice. And I love that you bought, it's always fun. Like when you talk to somebody like older, they're like, man, I wish I would have just kept all the houses I bought that I lived mm-hmm. in and then just turned them into rentals, you know? And sometimes you need that equity out of them to roll into other stuff, but it's, you know, it's always nice to be able to keep one of those first couple houses that you bought to live in as a rental, as you're moving up, because down the line, they make a big, big difference to the portfolio and the equity that you gain that somebody else pays for over time is pretty fun.
Yeah, we're just kicking ourselves for not buying more when we did, because I think we have like a 2.8% interest rate or something. You know, it's like hindsight's 20/20, but
yeah, I don't know that we're ever seeing those rates coming back. Yeah. At least anytime in the near future for sure. But look at those. It's hard to sell those ones. I'm like, those are hard to sell. 'Cause you're like, oh man, I don't know if I want to get rid of this. I got a 2.8% interest rate on it and I don't ever want to get rid of it.
Never get it back. Yeah.
I know. Right. Awesome. So now we're starting to think about short-term rentals. You said you started listening to the podcast, started kicking around that idea, probably, exploring what that looked like. And so kind of walk me through that journey.
Yeah. I think for a long time, we just kind of, we were dabbling. We were all over the place in terms of like where we wanted to purchase. Tyler mentioned skiing being one of the big reasons that he came here to Colorado. We ski as a family, our kids ski. So we always had kind of this dream that we wanted a mountain house in Colorado. We ski in like Beaver Creek, Vail, Breckenridge, though, and it's just so expensive to acquire in those markets that I think we kind of like that was our dream, but we knew that financially that was not going to be a reality for us. And so we started looking all across the U.S. I mean, we were in Oklahoma, we were looking in Georgia, we were looking in all of the major markets, just kind of putting our feelers out there to see what options we had and underwriting properties. And eventually we came back to Colorado realizing that for our first one, we wanted it to be close to home. We wanted it to be something that we can actually use. So it's an investment for us. It's money making is kind of the primary goal. But we also want to be able to use it with our family. And if we had a property in Georgia or something like that, we probably just wouldn't be using it as much. So we came back to Colorado. We looked in like Fairplay, which is a small town outside of the Breckenridge area. That's actually a really good market for short-term rentals, put a offer in on a house there, didn't end up getting it. And that led us to Grand Lake, which is not a huge ski destination because it's 45 minutes from Winter Park, which is the biggest ski resort in the area. But you still can go skiing there. It's great in the summer. There's a ton of lakes and reservoirs in that area. It's a little more affordable than something like a Breckenridge or a Vail or a Beaver Creek. They have less stringent regulations in that area. We ended up just kind of really liking the area, falling in love with the house, and that's what landed us where we are today.
Grand Lake, Colorado. I like you went all the way across the country and then came right back west.
We
like
did. It. Yeah. I mean, we were in the mountains. We were on lakes. We were looking at the beach. We were all over the place for like probably years, really, before we decided on 2.5 hours away from home.
Exactly. That's fun. So did you go ever visit those other areas? Did you guys go out and visit any of those other areas?
No, we didn't. We really, the place we probably got most serious about was Broken Bow, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And we had a realtor there, but we did not make it out. And after a few weeks of of working with him. We just kind of talked with one another, and like we would like to be able to have it closer to us if the numbers can work, even if it's not, you know, as cash flow positive as we could maybe get in Broken Bow or elsewhere, that yeah. it would be worth it for us to be closer, at least for our first one. And as Shannon said, just to be able to, you know, be close to not only to use, but also if we need to get to the property in short notice, that yeah. we could go there as needed.
Was your guys' plan from the beginning, I know you're self-managing, was your plan to self-manage always, even if it was going to be further away, or was that more of a decision because it was closer? Like, walk me through kind of the management decision there.
I think we went back and forth. When we first started underwriting properties, we were always underwriting them as they were full turnkey, like property managers. So we went back and forth. I think part of it is, yeah, proximity, like it's 2.5 hours away. If we have to be there, or need to be there, we can be there. And I think as we're learning now, going through kind of the acquisition phase and now moving into the launch phase, I am a control freak. Tyler, a little bit less so, but like we like to control the listing and the process and the pricing and have that guest interaction and guest communication. So far, that feels like the right choice for us.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, it's a big choice. Deciding what management structure, it's a big choice. Time-wise and just understanding-wise, once you get it dialed in, it's not like it's you're not spending yeah. full-time hours, but you have to be available, right? As you start to roll into this and you start dealing with a lot of guests and communication, you need to be on top of it and have that flexibility to do so. I always tell people, you know, you might have maybe only, you know, 5 to 10 hours a week of stuff to do with a property, but you don't know when those hours are coming. And most of it's with yeah. when the guest needs it, right? And so you have to have a fairly flexible type of a schedule where somebody can reach out to the guest, communicate with them, but also from a financial perspective, being able to sometimes some of these areas, it's really tough to pencil out cash flow without self-managing. Yeah. And you have to really think about that. And I always talk to people about the Intermountain West, the entire, you know, Intermountain West, and you know, it's our prices are really high. It's, you know, people love the mountains. They love to come visit all the outdoor stuff that we're mentioning and talking about that we love living out here. So do as everybody else. And they come out here. So it's not that the revenue potential is not there. It's just properties are really expensive to buy out here. And, yeah. and yeah. so the cash flow potential is sometimes less. A really good property sometimes is more of a break-even property. And sometimes that management decision is a make or break on positive or negative cash flow. And you guys probably, I was curious if that, when you were looking at all these different areas and kind of mentioned, like looking at that, if that made any sort of a decision there for you. Cause I know that with a lot of people, yeah. they start to think about that.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, you look at, you know, most property management companies are taking 25, 30, even 35%. So if your house is doing $100,000 every year, you know, 30 to 35,000 of that goes away if you're leveraging a property management company. So I think, yeah, financials played into it. The other thing we did interview, like when we were looking in Fair Play, we interviewed some property management companies. And there are good ones out there, but I think there's also a lot of like mediocre ones and even yeah. bad ones. And we found that a lot of them had policies that we just didn't match what we wanted the guest experience yeah. to look like. Like, you know, they put one roll of toilet paper in yeah. the bathroom and guests had to supply their own after that. And that's just not the experience that we wanted to deliver to our guests.
Yeah, it's for me, I always tell people it's absolutely the Achilles heel of the business. And even though short-term rentals have gotten so popular and there's now in a lot of these areas, a lot of options when it comes to management partners, I still believe that about 80 to 90% of them don't do business the way that we want to do business. And so yeah. it's kind of hard to find somebody that has the same view of this world as we do. And to your point, just little things that I think seem so ridiculous to me. And when you hear like, okay, you got one roll of toilet paper, I've heard of people having to bring their own linens to a place. And so they have like the beds don't even have linens on them in a major area. And I'm like, what? Like we yeah. just like shake our heads, but that's out there. And you can't just assume that everybody does business the same way. And many times it's, when you spend so much time buying a property, setting it up, create this amazing experience, if the delivery of that experience falls short, you're dead in the water right out of the gate anyways, right? And so yeah. it is, You know, I don't manage my own properties. I don't like to manage my own properties, but one of my least favorite parts of the process is hiring a property manager, because it's like, yeah. You know, I feel like I say, no, I don't like that. I don't want that. That's not what we do. And ultimately when we find a good one, they're worth their weight in gold. I love them, but they're few and far between in most markets out there, because our view of this world is just a little different than everybody's. And it seems weird, because like when we talk about it, I can't imagine anybody would want to bring their own linens or be stuck having to go to the store and get their own toilet paper once they run out. I mean, that stuff just seems ridiculous to me, but it's out there.
Yeah.
Well, and it's very market dependent too, right? Like, you know, Grand Lake, there are some, you know, higher tier properties, but a lot of the properties that we're competing against are just, you know, kind of average. And so it's good because it gives us a chance to stand out. But from a property management standpoint, you know, that's where the expectation is set, right? And so there's pros and cons to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we decided on Grand Lake as kind of a lifestyle asset, but, you know, still an investment. Just because this is popping into my head right now, you went to, you know, Columbus, Ohio, bought a turnkey long-term rental, never even seen it, don't care much about it, strictly an investment. Short-term rental, a little bit more of a lifestyle asset. We're interested in it. We're having fun with it. A lot more time invested, probably a heck of a lot more expensive, a lot more, you know, capital, time, everything else.
Oh, yeah.
Just as far as like your kind of grade of each of those processes, do you prefer one or the other? I know one is, you know, just way harder. Short-term rentals are way harder. I'm curious, is the fact that they are assets that you're interested in, does that have any like bearing on like the what you prefer or don't prefer?
So this is going to sound so cheesy, but I'll say it anyways. Like with Grand Lake, it feels like the time and the money and the energy and the stress and everything that we've put into that is because we're building something greater for our family. And with Columbus, it's like, oh, that's a place that we parked our money where it can grow. And like, we've got absolutely no attachment or interest in that at all. So we have very different processes. I mean, just, yeah, the hours that we have put into Grand Lake, the time, the money, the sweat, the tears, the time that we've spent up there and like really not even enjoyed Grand Lake much because we're working on the house and we're building furniture and we're like doing all of that stuff is just so different compared to Columbus. But like, I would not trade that for anything because that we see kind of the dream and the end goal of what we want to do for us and for our kids. And that's, I think, what's kind of driving us in that direction versus continuing to invest in long-term rentals.
Anything to add to that, Tyler? Is that kind of how where your head's at as well?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, sometimes I even forget that we have a place in Columbus, Ohio, right? You know, we have a few transactions a month that take place, but, you know, we don't ever think about the house or going there or anything like that. Whereas, you know, this Grand Lake house, it's a daily thing that we are talking about and thinking about. And, you know, we get a booking come in and Shannon and I look at each other like, we got another one, right? Like and I think that's where, you know, when we talk about like our careers and sales, like, I don't know if that has to do with it. It's like getting you know, a deal come in and it's super exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome. I appreciate you answering that. I've been investing for 26 years. So I've invested in a lot of different asset classes. I landed on short-term rentals. My first one was 2006, but I didn't really like switch all the way over until about 2014. And so, but since then, and that's kind of how I explained it. I said, I feel like all the other assets within real estate, great investments for me. Real estate has always done very, very well for me. And I can never say anything bad about any of them that I've invested in as a whole, but they always felt like a means to an end. And when I started investing in short-term rentals, there was a means to an end, but there was also this sense of ownership and pride and I had so much fun. And so the work and the effort didn't seem that bad, right? It was almost like it got me past some of the rough times because I enjoyed the assets. I loved having them. Like I almost kind of refer it to, and I've never, it's kind of crazy. I've actually never rented a property for to live in. And so I've only owned properties, but it would be the difference between like, if I rented a property, I'm not going to go take probably as much ownership in the grasses and the gardens and taking care of painting it and doing all that work that has to happen of owning a home, you know. But when I own it, I'm happy to do that stuff because it's like I just enjoy it. It's where I live. And these are places that we actually associate with our family and family time as well.
Yeah.
And that's a big difference. It's such a unique asset class within real estate that I don't think you really can explain it as well as feel it when you actually own those types of properties. And so I appreciate you answering that because I kind of wondered the same every time I always talk to people. I was the same way. It's just like, like Tyler said, I don't even know I have a property sometimes.
Yeah.
I forget when people ask me what I have, I don't even remember to mention it. You know, it's like the forgotten child, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, listen, so we got Grand Lake, we go to buy it. Any hiccups during acquisition, anything that was going on, like as we're going through the process?
We probably need a podcast just to talk about the acquisition hiccups.
Yeah.
It was just so painful. I mean, we were trying to close towards the end of the year. And so we were feeling pressure because we wanted it closed. We wanted a rental or a booking by the end of the year. The people that were selling to us were living in Singapore. So they lived, 18 hours ahead of us. They were doing a 1031 exchange. So they had, different things that they were contending with. And it was just on again, off again, communication challenges. We ended up having to put a new roof on that we weren't expecting. So the closing process was really, really challenging. Once we got through closing, though, I mean, it was fine. We got a booking in there before the end of the year. We took the, about 4 months really to like get rid of all of the furniture and paint and put everything brand new in and do new pictures. And all of that was pretty seamless. But yeah, there were days before we closed on it where we were like, are we going to get this house? Is this meant to be? We were kind of second guessing our decision during the process because it was just so hard to get to that point where it was finally ours.
So that was it. Were a lot of the delays because they weren't identifying something on their 1031. So do you feel like they were kicking the can down the road because they didn't want to close soon enough? And then you guys are on the opposite time frame saying, hey, listen, we need to get this done in service, get somebody in. Otherwise this screws our entire tax plan up for that year. Mm-hmm. Right.
They didn't have a ton of urgency to sell the house. They had bought this property probably like 15 years ago. It had appreciated just crazy amounts. I mean, so I think they were selling it out of convenience where we felt we were like, we need this, like this is the house that we want, but we also need it in a very specific time frame. So just kind of two different agendas.
Yeah. They kept coming back with different close dates and, this didn't align with previous conversations that were had. And, I mean, we fell out of contract during the inspection resolution phase. And we ended up getting back into contract, at some point. That's a long story, as Shannon said, but, there was a lot of ups and downs and just if it was going to happen or not.
Was there any point during all that up and down that your earnest money was hard and you were at risk of losing anything? Or was it because was there that stress as well in there?
Oh yeah.
We felt like we had the right to get our earnest money back and they felt like they had the right to keep the earnest money. So there was some very contentious conversations that happened during that time frame.
Yeah, it sounds like testing the nerves a little bit.
It's got to be easier for the next one, right?
Yeah. I mean, so many people we talk to that, invest in real estate or their realtors are like, we've never seen this before. Yeah. This doesn't really ever happen. And so, the sellers were a joy to work with.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've actually worked with some sellers that were in the middle of a 1031 exchange, and I've had them do that where they're kicking the can down the road because they're like they're not identifying anything, and they know that the minute they close, they have 45 days, and the last 10 years we've had a really an inventory shortage, and so it's a possibility when you're dealing with a seller that is going to be like that, and they're maybe not fully upfront about what they're really trying to do, and they start stringing it along. It can be a real, in your guys' case, when you're staring down the end of the year, and we need to get this sucker on the market. that can be a, I mean, that can be a big deal, right? And plus having earnest money and everything else. So I'm glad you navigated through it. I'm glad that it, it all worked out in the end. But so tell me when you closed, and it sounds like it was furnished. It was a short-term rental. So you were able to, was it a short-term rental or was it just a furnished second home?
Yeah. Yes and no. It was a short-term rental in that it was listed on Airbnb, but it wasn't a short-term rental that anyone like us would probably rent. I mean,
I remember it. It was a massive turnaround.
Yeah. And that's when, I think that's when we walked in, we saw the potential, which is, which was good, but yeah, it was fully furnished. So we closed 12-1. We took over the listing with the property manager at the time. We kept the property manager on board, through the end of February. So we were able to get rentals in, 2025 for tax purposes. And then we took it off the market in April. And we had a design team come in. We were there for a week. We spent a lot of hours doing, as Shan said, building furniture, taking furniture out, et cetera. And then we ended up launching by the end of April.
It actually worked out well, though, because the property manager that was in place, who was providing like turnkey property management services, is very flexible in what he does. And so we are keeping him on as kind of our boots on the ground, like can run over there if anything happens. He's done a lot of the like painting work for us. So he's done a lot of like odd jobs around the house. So that part actually worked out really well. His wife is a cleaner. So we've just kind of kept them in place and just evolved that relationship from being like property manager to more of our handyman and cleaning service up there.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. It worked out that way. And I remember, I mean, that, I'm sure he has a pretty nice opinion about the difference in how the property turned out. I remember when you guys were kind of navigating that, like, what are we going to do? And it had you have your front door, but a lot of people enter through the garage, and we were talking about, hey, make sure there's budget there. So that first impression is that, and you guys did this beautiful game room. Those of you listening that are regulars, you always know that we post these properties in the show notes so you can check it out. But you guys did a really nice turnaround on that property. It turned out really, really great. And not that we want light winters anymore out here west. We want more snow, but it was probably kind of nice having a light winter through that setup phase.
It actually was. Like, we had a hot tub delivered, I think it was in March, and leading up to it, like a month leading up to it, all I could think about was like, please don't get a snowstorm. Please don't get a snowstorm. Cause we had like a day where an electrician was coming, the hot tub was getting delivered, and then Mike's team was coming in to do install and photos and stuff. So if we had to push the hot tub delivery, it wouldn't have been there for the photos. And it was like 60 degrees, snow. So it worked out in our favor, not Grand Lake's favor or Lake Granby or any of those up there. But for us, it worked out fine.
Well, and the week leading up to that, we had to put in a new door for a couple of reasons. We were planning on doing the hot tub on the deck. But after, working with a deck person or architect or engineer, to see if the deck could be reinforced for a hot tub, they said, it was just going to be too expensive. It was basically going to be a new deck. So we decided to put the hot tub on the side of the house where a fire pit was. And then by doing that, we put a door in that would not only give access to the hot tub, but it also allow us to legally sleep people in the bunk room, which we at that time could not list that bunk room as a bedroom. So it kind of killed two birds with one stone, which was very helpful. That was probably our biggest project that we had to do on the house itself.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And this, Shannon, might be the only winter in history that you were praying for no snow if you guys are skiers.
So I know.
Most winters you guys are, I mean, we all out west want the snow. I'm not a skier, but I still want the snow. It's this might be the only one. And then those of you that are thinking about putting a hot tub on a deck, listen to what Tyler just said, because I can't tell you how many times people don't like, they think that most decks can hold hot tubs. Most decks cannot hold hot tubs, and you have to get them reinforced and re-engineered. It can be really dangerous. It is shocking to me how many times I hear of people just being like, yeah, we're just putting it on the deck. And I'm like, before you do that, like, understand, like, those decks have to be built for hot tubs.
Yeah.
So
yeah, the engineer said it's like parking a car on your deck. So
yeah, exactly. There's a lot of weight in those hot tubs with the, when they're full of water. So, okay. So we got it. You said you launched end of April, not exactly the peak season in the winter, in mountain markets. Those are usually kind of our melt off seasons, you know, when you start to get into April and May, and then we roll into a really nice summer season. So tell me how the launch went.
It was nerve wracking at first. I mean, I think you hear about all of these people that launch and they get like 12 bookings in the first hour. And we launched on a Friday afternoon, I think the weekend of Easter, and like nothing happened those first 2 days. And so I started panicking, like, oh, we did something wrong, or we priced too high, you know, like everything that goes through your mind. And then the bookings started coming in after that pretty steadily, a couple every week. And so we have a fair number of reservations for May, June, and July. So June, July, August is kind of the busy season up there, our peak season. So we're starting to fill in pretty nicely, and we've got a range of reservations. I'd say we have some kind of long weekends. We've got the full week of 4th of July booked, which is awesome because that's a good week to book out up there. We've got some middle of the week reservations. So yeah, it's been exciting. I think Tyler mentioned like every time we get a notification from Owner Res that we have a new booking in, we're like, yes, you know, it's another one.
wait till those reviews start coming in. It'll be the same. You start getting the bookings and that's really fun. And then when people start saying how much they love the house, like that's like, I always joke all the time within our community. Once you start getting those reviews coming, I swear people like that better than the money hitting their bank account. I said, I'm not quite there. But I like the reviews, but I still like the money hitting the bank account.
I think we'll like the money too. But yeah, I mean, like we are so attached to this house. It's our first one. We're just so invested in it. So hopefully people enjoy the, you know, the sauna or the hot tub or some of the things that we've intentionally put into the property as much as we do.
You mentioned you haven't had a chance to really just go enjoy it because you're working so hard on it. There will be plenty of those times that you get to enjoy it. I promise you're always still working on it. I don't know that I've ever gone to one of my properties when I didn't have something to do, right? And so, you mentioned you were able to go and visit with some friends and you guys stayed in it. How was that? Was that fun? Kind of letting the families hang out, and how the kids like it?
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, so we kind of envision our target audience, either a single family with kids or like two families with kids. And so we had the opportunity last weekend to go up with some of our best friends. They have three kids. We have two, all under the age of six. So it was kind of like exactly how we envisioned. The kids loved the bunk room with the claw machine and the Pac-Man machine, which is like exactly what we put it down there for. We got to enjoy the sauna. So it was really fun to have them up and mostly enjoy our time there. We still were doing like projects here and there, but for the most part, we got to enjoy it and use the hot tub and like actually relax up there.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. And then we had, you know, as we said earlier, there were takeaways that, you know, when we were there working, just purely working on the place, that we didn't, find, you know, things like shoe racks, coat racks, things like that, that we hadn't, you know, utilized ourselves or needed ourselves. And so by having, you know, kind of true guests there, that was able, you know, allowed us to be able to, you know, see where our gaps were and, you know, get those fixed before we have our first official guests.
Yeah, I love that. That is a really, really good point as well. I always tell people, many times you go and you have an agenda, you have your checklist, and you're there working and you're doing your stuff, and you're not paying attention to anything but that. And then when you can go just be a guest in your own place and just enjoy it and just sit back and relax, you actually realize and notice things that you wouldn't notice on your work trips. Like you identify things and gaps that you might have overlooked when you can just enjoy it as a guest. And so it's still really important to go do that as well. And those can be good discovery trips as well, to say, okay, what can we are a guest now. What can we do different to kind of elevate that experience? Cause that's what it's all about. And, you know, I'm really proud of you guys. When I saw the property at the first, and then when I saw the property at the end, it's a massive turnaround. And, you know, it's a completely different property, which is going to be great. And I know that those launches can be super stressful, especially if we go a couple of days without a booking. But when they start coming in, it's pretty fun. And you guys are right on the right track. You, as we kind of wrap up, I always like to look forward. You mentioned you might have some future plans with the Ohio property that we've never seen, but like, what does the future look like? What is future plans look like?
I think we'd like to acquire another property this year. Either selling Ohio and rolling that into another short-term rental or just, you know, buying one and keeping Ohio. So TBD on that. But I know we've kind of like, okay, we've got the mountain house that's near a lake. Like, do we go beach next? So we're kind of dabbling in maybe like a Florida market or something. But yeah, definitely, like, we want to get through this launch, get through peak season in Grand Lake, and then acquisition mode, I think, before the end of the year.
Nice. Yeah. So don't wait till December to like go under contract.
No, we right? won't this time.
give yourself a couple months. Like, if we're going to acquisition mode, let's not like make it like fourth quarter, right?
Yeah. No, we'll probably start looking in like July, August. I don't know. I'm on like Zillow and Realtor.com every single day, just kind of keeping my feelers out there. So.
But yeah, we do need to narrow down the market a little bit for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always just look for those direct flights from Denver, wherever United flies, that's where you can, those are the markets you look at, right? I'm always like, I'm in Salt Lake. So I'm like, wherever Delta's give me a direct flight to, that's where I look at.
Exactly. Have to go
a bunch of layovers. Awesome. Well, final question at the end. This has been a really fun conversation, and I appreciate you guys spending your time with me. But I always like to know, and both of you have to answer it. Going back, giving yourself some advice, giving yourself like, I wish I knew this going into it. I wish I knew this when I was younger. Is there anything that comes to mind?
I'll start, and this is probably the easiest answer, is just to not wait any longer. You know, I think Shannon mentioned it earlier, but you know, we've been listening to, you know, your podcast for, you know, 5 or 6 years now, and this has always been kind of something in the back of our heads, and we've been serious about it, and we've been, you know, we've kind of laid off the gas a little bit, could have put it in our back pocket, and we've been serious. You know, it's kind of been this roller coaster, right? And I don't know what it was this year where we finally decided to pull the trigger, but we definitely wish we would have pulled the trigger sooner than that, just because of it's been fun, and you know, as Shane said, we're going to look for hiring another one. And if we would have done that, you know, 6 years ago, we could have 6 properties at this point.
Yeah. Just keep, hey, no time like the present, right? And we all wish we could just start a lot sooner than we did, but it's at some point it's taking that action. Now the ball's rolling. So that's awesome.
Yeah. But better late than never. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I've listened to most of these podcasts. I think most people say that at the end, and I would echo it, but I think that to add to that, not letting fear get in the way. I think it is really scary, especially doing your first one. It's like, there's no guarantee. There's no promise. You know, there's a process and a formula, right, that we followed, with Vodacy. So we felt like we were setting ourselves up for success, but you never know. And you know, these are some of the biggest checks that we've ever written, without a guaranteed return. Mm-hmm. And so it can be really scary and intimidating to kind of take that leap and then continue to take that leap. I think I would just not let fear get in the way as much as, or kind of doubt and fear as much as maybe we did in the beginning.
I love it. And it's so true. At some point you have to take the leap, because there is no guarantee. There's nothing out there that says this is going to work out. And when we know we don't have that, you know, it's like all we can do is try to mitigate risk as much as possible, stack the odds in our favor as much as possible. But at the end of the day, you got to take the leap of faith a little bit. And it is hard and it is scary. When you do it, you know, I always say everything I want is on the other side of being scared to death, right? And so it's like you have to kind of I always have to remind myself of that. I'm like, okay, you know, should I do this or not? And I always remind myself, hey, listen, anything that's ever good that's ever happened in your life was you were scared to death before you took the leap, right? And then when you do, you gain this level of confidence, like, oh man, that wasn't maybe nearly as hard as I thought it was going to be. I made it, you know, I painted this worse picture than there was going to be. But it doesn't mean that you just put it all on black and roll the dice, right? And say, okay, we do want to try to stack the odds in our favor. And you guys have done that. You're spending a lot of time, you know, doing what you're doing, putting yourself in a position to succeed. Then when you do, we just double down. It's not like everything worked out, right? There was things that happened along the way. You're like, oh, I'm not going to do that again. And that happens on every journey, right? And so, I love that piece of advice as well, just to say, hey, listen, it is going to be scary. And at some point you have to say, am I willing to do it or am I not willing to do it? And, I like taking the chances. Makes me feel good after I'm done. I mean, win, lose or draw, I'm like, at least I took the chance, right?
Totally. Yeah. We never want to be in a position where we're thinking like, what if we had done that? So now we know, and it's worked out for us, and we see
there's still that risk, right?
There's still that risk.
Always. It always is, right? Yeah. Exactly. It's literally always navigating the risks, the changes in the market, the changes in things that we're doing. Even today, like you can have a property for 10 years and you're still navigating what's going on right in front of you. Right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Awesome. Well, guys, this has been fun. This has been a lot of fun for me. I know people that are listening enjoy these conversations. I appreciate you joining me. Those of you listening, thanks for spending your time with us. It's been fun. And we always know how valuable your time is, and we appreciate it. Two things at the end of every episode. If you listen a lot, if you haven't done this, I'm really disappointed in you. Please subscribe or follow whatever platform you're watching or listening on. Those things help us a lot. We don't run ads or sponsorships, so you don't have to listen to a whole bunch of people telling you to buy stuff or what to do. And so the only way the show grows is if you guys share it. And so if you have somebody to share it with, direct sharing it is awesome. But if you don't have somebody to share it with, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on, the algorithm will share it with other people just like you. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.